A Sky original. The horizon of the Earth is surrounded by clouds as the camera rapidly pulls away. Stars fly past and form a line, a constellation, and as soon as it is formed, it reflects on the S of Lionsgate. The word is shown in 3D lettering. Lionsgate passes through clouds. A light shines through the S and G as the deep metallic blue lettering is shown against a darkening background. On a black background, a white circle emits a beam of light. It blinks and gazes around. It illuminates and rests above the M in transmission. The name is fully revealed with a Wi-Fi signal above the circle of light. Against a purple background of silhouetted flowers and arrow-shaped seed heads, Motion Picture Capital, a Reliance Entertainment company, appears, red, blue and clear arrows overlapping above. From a black background, a multitude of stylized tiny white birds fly forwards, leaving behind "Mad as Birds," written in white, a white hat above the eye in birds. Strips of film coil around to form the body of a silver dragon. Wales screen, written below in English and Welsh. A ribbon of green slashes across a pale background to form Film Cymru, Wales. Then the screen goes black. A man's face is revealed in the head-high opening between displaced books on a tall bookcase. He glances around before reaching into the exposed hiding space to retrieve a small box. Caption, August the 15th, 1939, England. Mr. Wheatley furtively glances around as he tips the contents from the box onto a desk. His nervous demeanour is evident as he removes a false bottom from the box. He is perplexed to find it empty. An anxious frown contracts his brow. He ransacks the bookshelf, heedlessly casting books to the ground. In desperation, his arm reaches into the space behind, but his frantic search is futile. He searches the shelf below. More books are cast to the floor of the classroom he's in. A chalkboard is crammed with written text, a square wall clock midway above it. Wooden top with metal leg desks are uniformly lined up, facing the front desk. The panicking, slim, middle-aged man desperately snatches up and gazes inside the empty box once more. Suddenly, he snatches jacket, fedora, hat, donning them as he enters a wood-paneled hallway. He grabs his trench coat and hastens for the exit. His speedy flight from the school on a bicycle is observed from a high window by an older woman. Then he makes a call from an isolated red public telephone box.
I can't go back! The camera! It's missing! Calm down, man. Don't you understand? They've taken it! They know! They know they're being watched! I can't! Hello?
He resumes cycling along the lonely country road and reaches a seaside town. He pedals along the esplanade between beach and beach huts, passing people of all ages, enjoying all manner of seaside activities. A man sells ice cream from a cart. A newspaper seller's board reads, "Britain prepares."
Germany defiant! Poland in crisis! Britain prepares for war!
The dismounting man glances at the seller before making his way to a pier. He enters the Art Deco Pier Pavilion through a ticketed turnstile. Catching his breath, he makes his way towards the end of the busy wooden deck. Coloured bunting is strewn from one side to the other. Deck chairs line up to face the sea on either side. Behind him, a man with an ebony walking stick stands watching. A group of teenage girls are marching single file onto an empty beach. They each carry a wooden juggling club. Their teacher keeps pace with them. Mr. Wheatley takes a deck chair from a stack. On the beach, the girls turn to face their teacher with military precision. Alternate girls step briskly forwards, now making a line in front of the others. They stand to attention. At the end of the pier, Mr. Wheatley places his deck chair facing out. There are no other patrons around him. He checks his watch as he glances towards the entrance. Flipping his coat from under him, he sits, removes his fedora, grimacing as he fans his sweaty face. A back view of the man is slowly approached as he replaces hat on head. He takes something from his breast pocket. On the beach, the no-nonsense dressed girls turn as one to face away from the sea. They raise one juggling pin to the sky. On the pier, Mr. Wheatley's deck chair is overturned, his fedora on the wooden decking. The area is deserted. A wind rolls his hat towards the ornate wrought iron railings. It rises above, then flies beyond them. It flies into a cloud-filled sky. The screen turns black. Production and cast names appear as a school badge is embroidered with a yellow silk-threaded needle. Sky Cinema presents a Sky Original, Motion Picture Capital, the Welsh Government, and Film Cymru Wales present a Reliance Entertainment Productions 6, Mad as Birds and Ella Communications production in association with West Madison Entertainment, a film by Andy Goddard, Eddie Izzard, Carla Urie, James Darcy, Kellen Jones, David Schofield, Maria Dragas, Tijon Mare, Franziska Brandmeier, Louisa Celine Gaffron, Daria Wolfe, Kevin Eldon, Nigel Lindsay. With Jim Broadbent and Judy Dench, screenplay by Kellen Jones, Eddie Izzard and Andy Goddard. The completed badge has text under a rampant lion. Augusta Victoria College, Bexhill-on-Sea. There's a Union Jack top right corner, a swastika the other. The image fades into darkness. 6 minutes to midnight. Audio described by Tacey. The sea swells below. Waves crash onto shore, creating white spume against jagged grey slabs of rock. A cliff face rises to a desolate scrubland. A maroon and cream bus travels along the lonely coastal road. Beyond are fields that stretch into an uninterrupted horizon of patchwork green. A blonde-haired man pops a cigarette into his mouth. He is one of few on the bus. The bus driver grins at him in his rear-view mirror.
Is this your first visit to Bexhill, Shoemare?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Bus driver Charlie pulls up.
Let's hope you last longer than the other bloke. Have you designed?
The newcomer stands by imposing wrought iron gates and watches the cheery man drive off. He turns to face the entrance. With leather briefcase in hand, he walks towards them. On the school grounds, the girls are exercising. Toes are touched.
N1, N2, and up.
Arms reach to the sky, shoulders side.
Bend.
In white vests with swastika logo and navy shorts, a wide stance, bent, arms outstretched, twist to opposite toes.
Keep those arms straight.
The approaching man is keenly observed by the girls, especially a blonde-haired Astrid, who scowls suspiciously.
And one, and two, and stretch. Very good. Nice, girls. Take over, Astrid.
Good meters, Ezel. Astrid, English. Thank you.
The teacher joins the newcomer.
5, 6, 7, 8.
How may I help?
I'm here about the teaching post. I'm Thomas Miller.
Here's Akella. Welcome to Augusta Victoria.
Thank you.
This way, please.
He stands observing the girls.
Mr. Miller?
A bespectacled girl with auburn plaits watches the exchange.
And up. Shoulders, arms out and down. One and two and up.
There's been an alliance between England and Germany here for many years.
Thomas regards a framed formal portrait of an imposing woman.
Our namesake. She was the last German empress. Should you obtain your position, your room will be on the top floor. Modest, but south-facing.
Sounds perfect.
Mr. Wheatley found it agreeable.
She smiles at him.
Please take a seat.
Not a lot of competition.
Fide e pazientia. Faith and perseverance. The school motto.
He sits on a wooden pew set against the wood panel wall.
She may ask you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thomas Miller sighs as he watches Ilse Keller rejoin her charges. He sighs again. The hallway is dark with wooden, olive-green walls. Light filters in through the front doors. He decisively places hat and briefcase beside him, mentally composes himself, stands and scrutinizes a glass cabinet filled with trophies. There are framed photographs on the wall behind him. He turns and regards and wanders over to them. The girls are shown in sporting activities, including swimming, diving and archery. He is reflected in the protective glass as he solemnly scrutinizes the images.
Magnificent, aren't they?
On the stairs above is the grey-haired, austere woman who watched Mr. Wheatley cycle away. As she descends the stairs, he picks up hat and briefcase.
Eleanor Rockall.
Thomas Miller.
They shake hands.
Thank you for coming at such short notice.
Not at all.
Please.
She indicates her office that's filled with exquisite objets d'art. A wooden perpetual calendar shows Monday the 21st of August.
You come recommended by an agency. A lot of different schools, I see.
Thank you.
That wasn't a compliment. It says here you're musical.
I play the piano a little.
It's useful. You married?
I was. Spanish flu.
I would not normally employ a journeyman teacher. But your predecessor turned out to be unreliable. My girls need order. Next week, we present them to the Anglo-German Fellowship.
They must be looking forward to it.
They speak of nothing else. Their last days of summer.
Hopefully not.
So what brings you here, Mr. Miller? What sort of Englishman would accept a post teaching Herr Hitler's League of German Girls?
Mein Vater ist Deutsch.
My father is German.
I do not like surprises. I will place you on a trial period.
Thank you. When do I start?
Then, Thomas is composing himself before stepping into a classroom. On entry, the chatter ceases and the girls stand. Astrid is at one of the front desks. He stiffly regards the girls.
Good morning. My name is Mr. Miller. And I will be your new English teacher.
All but one girl is impassive. He turns to the chalkboard, erases Never Do Tomorrow What You Can Do Today and a list of girls' names. The girls exchange arch glances between them.
Mr. Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Miller.
Good morning.
Astrid.
Astrid.
We welcome you.
Thank you. So, what have you been studying this summer? Oh, please, sit down.
As one, they comply.
Is there an English book that you like the best?
Astrid's companion whispers in her ear before replying.
Mr. Wheatley did not need books. No, he told us stories out loud.
Did he now?
Thomas Miller closes the book he's holding.
Well, I'm not very good at public speaking.
It doesn't have to be Shakespeare, Mr. Miller.
Please, tell us a story.
Very well. What about a story... What about a story, a romantic story? About... A young man who misses his sweetheart.
Is that you, Mr. Miller?
No.
Astrid, the Führer would say he isn't man enough. Thomas, the Führer would say what?
The Führer.
Astrid is suddenly contrite as she turns to regard him. Bespectacled, auburn-plaited, Gretel, thoughtful, Sigrid speaks.
Please, tell the story.
The young man who misses his sweetheart.
Yes. Once upon a time, in a place called...
Walking past the classroom, Miss Rockall stands and eavesdrops. Smiling, Ilse Keller joins her.
What's he singing? We should keep an eye on him.
Astrid is less than enthusiastic about singing the song. She's keenly observed by Gretel, who isn't singing at all.
Very good.
Keep time, but not too fast.
Deportment class is a book on each girl's head.
Grace, poise, confidence.
Thomas Miller plays piano. Miss Rockall keeps time.
Remember, girls,
You will be representing Augusta Victoria. Straighten your shoulders, Sigrid. Appropriate attention makes the appropriate impression.
Gretel's book falls off.
Gretel!
With a glance at Thomas, Gretel hastily replaces the book.
Play on, Mr. Miller.
Gretel is mortified. The other girls are smirking at her. Ilse Keller regards her with compassion. Later, Ilse leads the girls to swim in the sea, all appropriately dressed in swimmer costumes, hat and gowns. Gretel brings up the rear and is purposefully jostled by two girls as they pass. Sipping tea from a delicate and pretty cup, Thomas Miller watches them go.
It's a Morgenschwimmen. Rain or shine, Ilse insists. Why don't you join us?
He takes a hasty sip before complying. An arm reaches the water's surface. The girls swim with strong competence out to sea. An aerial view shows them rounding a red-flagged buoy, Ilse leading. Thomas and Miss Rochel are sat on rocks, watching.
Ilse was on the reserve team for the Berlin Olympics, you know.
Impressive.
You're lucky to have her back. Their Morgenschwimmen is about as much of England as they'll ever see. I like to protect the girls from the world outside.
They never venture out these days?
England can be an unforgiving place if you happen to be German. As I'm sure you know, Mr. Brenner.
The girls. I almost caught you today. In your dreams, little girl. It's freezing. Hurry up, Paola. You're last. No, I'm not. Gretel is always last. The toad didn't even get wet today.
Who are you talking about?
Gretel didn't swim.
Red and white swimming-capped Ilse glances up the beach. Gretel is collecting shells washed by incoming waves. She pads forwards, stooping, to add another to her collection. She holds it up to scrutinize it. And then something piques her curiosity further ahead. It's the body of a man, fully dressed, with waves lapping around him. She takes tentative steps towards him. His leather shoes and suit trousers are sodden. Dread fills her face that is framed by blue sky and clouds as she stares at his pallid, waterlogged death mask of a face. It's Mr. Wheatley. Thomas Miller rises, starts to run. Miss Rochel stands. Gretel backs away, distraught. Astrid and the others join the girl, who is comforted. Thomas approaches the body and stares down at the agonized expression frozen in place on the dead man's face. Astrid puts a hand to her mouth. The distraught girls are sobbing, huddling and clinging onto one another for comfort. Thomas hunkers down by the body, expressionless. And then back at the school, Ilse Keller bids a policeman goodbye. Watched by Miss Rochel, the man salutes rather than shaking the young woman's proffered hand. Ilse glances at the older woman, who turns and pensively walks away from the front door, her passage stately, gaze unwavering in staring straight ahead. Later, Thomas joins the ladies around a highly polished table for the evening meal. The atmosphere is tense, and he exchanges glances with Ilse Keller, who isn't eating. Miss Rochel sternly presides at the head of the table. Later, the night dimly lit by street lamps, Thomas walks purposefully along the seafront to the local town. He glances at his wristwatch, drags long and hard on a cigarette. Colonel Smith sits watching a music hall performance, a silver ornamented ebony black walking stick in his hands.
Come on! I know you're out there. I can hear you breathing. Oh, she's off. You like that one, didn't you, my dear? No, listen. Oh, you're very good. You carry on like this. Oh, you carry on like this. My dinner'll go cold, which would be an improvement. Not as cold as the marriage, though, eh, sir?
Thomas sits by the colonel.
Now, you're very kind. Now, listen. Here's one for you. You like this one? Well, you better ask, or they won't have me back. Stop. Now, listen.
Well, officially, whispers of suicide.
Wheatley wasn't brave enough to commit suicide. He was terrified when he called me. Someone's got to him first.
Everything he said was right. 20 girls, the governess, the maid, part-time cook.
I need more than this.
The colonel glares at the angry person sat behind him.
How are you getting on with the governess and Ilse Keller?
My German helps.
At least it's good for something. Keep searching the house. We're running out of time. Hitler's in bed with Stalin and has a free hand in Poland. The War Office believes the Germans will extract the girls before the end of summer.
And an early exit could only signal one thing.
We'll detain the girls before that. But if we jump too soon, we'd start the whole bloody thing.
What kind of plan is this?
Strange times, Miller. And every game of chess needs its pawns.
They're just girls.
They are the daughters and goddaughters of the Nazi high command. So, you remember whose side you're on. As soon as there's movement, we'll take the school lock stock. Hold the lot.
There's prisoners.
You wake up, Miller! This next war will be like nothing we've ever seen.
The cantankerous colonel rises and leaves.
Those are the words I've been waiting to hear for 25 years. Stop it, you terrible lot.
Walk upon England's mountains free, and what a holy lamb of God on England's peasant path.
Ilse Keller presides over the girls singing. Gretel's in the middle. A chessboard, a game in progress, a pipe rack. It's Saturday the 26th of August. Thomas Miller is in his room, books in hand. He sits at his desk, uneven floorboards under the rug, complaining as he leans back in his wooden chair. He tests it out, stares at the floor. Sighing, he glances around, and then decides to use one of the books he's holding as a stabilizing prop. Satisfied it will do, he sits. He picks up another book. He regards its spine. He becomes aware of radio's broadcasting Nazi propaganda and investigates. He descends the stairs. Radio. Because you are flesh from our flesh and blood from our blood, the same spirit that dominates us burns in your young minds. The door to Miss Rochel's office is open. She is sat with the girls and Ilse Keller, and they listen with rapt attention. The girls' fervour increases as they intently listen. Their breath quickens with proud stirrings, though Gretel appears less enthusiastic. Radio. As the columns of our movement sweep through Germany today, I know you will join with them. We know around us is Germany. Within us, Germany marches. And behind us, Germany follows. Thomas watches with carefully schooled expression. Suddenly, Ilse stands, extended arm salutes with straightened hand. The girls leap up and join in. Gretel's the last to get to her feet. She glances at Thomas before also raising her arm and mumbling her chant. Miss Rochel adds her arm in impassioned voice to the chant, but falters when she notes Thomas's scrutiny. Brow furled, her arm slowly drops. He turns away, deep in troubled thought. An aerial view of the Tudor-styled Gothic mansion of a school with its formal gardens and wooded surroundings. Thomas sits nursing a strong drink in his room. He stares into the distance at his glass.
Come in.
He puts glass aside and stands as the governess enters.
Miss Rochel.
It means hail victory, Mr. Miller, that's all.
He remains impassive.
We shouldn't apologize for passion, for pride. Why should we criticize a country that strives to be great?
Exhill was a wonderful town to grow up in. The seaside, the downs, the community. As a little girl, I felt very safe. My father doted on me, and he instilled in me a sense of pride. My teaching and my school is dedicated to that. These girls are my life. They give me hope. And that's why I join in when they say, "Hail victory." See Kyle, Mr. Miller. I don't expect you to understand.
Later, Thomas is teaching.
But if you wish the wish the witch wishes, I do not wish the wish you wish to wish.
Good. Peter Piper.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Later, he finds Gretel alone against the crenellated parapet of a roof terrace.
There you are.
Checking up on me, Mr. Miller.
He clambers through the window to join her, landing with a gymnast's flourish.
I was worried about you. The girls were worried about you.
You're not a very good liar, Mr. Miller. The girls don't like me. I'm happy with it. I understand more than them.
Yes, I think perhaps you do.
She watches as he sits near her, crosses his legs at the ankles.
But you don't look very happy. Gretel, what happened with Mr. Wheatley?
What Aunt Keller says, I must overcome my fears if I am to be strong.
Gretel.
Do you think she's right?
Gretel, it is all right to be frightened.
Really?
She chokes back her tears, glances at him.
Yes.
What frightens you, Mr. Miller?
Astrid.
Time to come in, girls. It's choir practice in 10 minutes.
Then they're all in Charlie's bus, driving a coastal road.
I'm still not sure about this.
After what happened, maybe it's what the girls need, a change of scene.
We mustn't stray too far.
It might do us all some good to be out and about. And Fräulein Keller tells me the views from Pevensey Castle are magnificent.
I wish I could say the same for the choice of transport.
Charlie scowls as he approaches a police block. He's waved to a halt. A vehicle has already been searched and is reloading sacks.
All right, girls.
Good morning.
To you as well.
What's going on here, then?
First line of defence, isn't it? We need to pull our finger out. Eastbourne's got a lookout post.
Eastbourne? What do you think Hitler's going to do? Steal the fish and chips?
We need to be prepared.
Righto, Ronnie, lad. Ta-da!
He drives on, leaving Ronnie behind.
Dirty craps. Come on, lads. Pick it up.
A panoramic view of Pevensey Castle on its hill and surrounding grounds. The girls are running across the ruins to stand on a low wall, gazing out to sea.
We needed this.
Astrid, I can almost see Germany.
Be careful, girls.
Sigrid, Mama, save me from all this terrible food and swimming caps. And the rain, too. Suspicious local boys watch the girls with disapproval.
Girls, quieten down.
Mr. Miller's quite right.
You'll wake up the sleeping giant.
Are there giants here?
Ask Miss Ruckle.
They walked the land and lived on the top of hilltops, where they could see the whole of England.
What did they do?
Made a nuisance, I expect.
Like Siegfried.
A giant was employed to protect the castle.
They fed him in bread and mustard and a hogshead of beer. He slept on the shore down there. Why else do you think the land is so flat?
He must have been heavy.
Heavier than a steamship. They say he could walk from Dover to France without getting his head wet.
Thomas Miller gazes across at Gretel, balancing as she walks along a wall all alone. Later, people dressed in their finest evening wear are arriving at the school for the Anglo-German Fellowship soiree. Thomas loads a sub-miniature Minox Riga spy camera with film. There are maps on his desk. Glancing at his reflection, he shrugs into a tuxedo jacket. He wears a black bow tie that he adjusts. He opens the door to Ilse, who smiles approvingly at him in her glittering black dress with floral patterning.
Look at you, Mr. Miller. Quite the gentleman.
And you are looking very elegant tonight, Fräulein Keller.
Thank you. Shall we?
Yes.
He closes his door. Arriving guests are handed flutes of champagne. As Thomas and Ilse descend the sweeping switchback wooden staircase, they pause. She pins a swastika badge to his lapel.
I just would like to say thank you.
A photographer takes a photo of the pair. Ilse smiles and carries on down the stairs. Thomas regards the pin with a troubled expression. His hand strays to his lapel. He sighs and then descends. Champagne flutes are filled. And then guests are sat indulgently watching the girls perform. Miss Rochel smiles proudly as two girls play a piano accompaniment for Sigrid, who performs a magic trick with interlocking hoops, manipulating them until they come apart. The camera slowly moves back through the assembled guests. The rest of the girls are stood at the back. Performance concluded, an austerely slender man casts glances at Ilse, who is on the same row, but across the aisle in the other block of seating. Having captured her attention, he stands, leaves. Her expression becomes fixed and formal. A slow, sweeping view of Miss Rochel's office. Within the wood-panelled walls is a mix of Art Deco and Victorian furnishings. A brown-painted fireplace has a needlepoint fire screen and chairs before it. At the governess's desk, Thomas is hurriedly leafing through a book. He replaces it in a desk drawer and rifles through loose sheets of paper pertaining to timetables and other school-related issues. The drawer above contains yet more mundane papers. He glances at the mantelpiece clock, turns his search to yet more drawers. He finally finds papers listing names, including high-ranking and titled, under the heading Anglo-German Fellowship, a black eagle above a stylized oak wreath, a swastika at its centre. He takes photographs. Ilse makes a polite excuse me, and she leaves the presentation. Thomas replaces the papers, and on hearing voices, stares at the door. An Art Deco figurine of two girls dancing, a flame between them, frames the doorway. He hurriedly closes the drawer, hides behind the desk.
Shouldn't really do this without first asking Frau Rockel, but I know how much you love Reuter. Yes. She's very proud of this piece.
It's delightful.
Isn't it?
The fire dance. You made only 7 of these.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Morgan. Tomorrow night. Ilse, tomorrow? I need more time. Man, I have orders. The girls must leave before the war starts. You have a location? Ilse? Yes. Man, safe for the plane to land. Yes. He hands her something. Ilse, what is this? Man, a microfilm. A list of British operatives working in Germany. Everyone, everything. You think the Führer would allow this trip if there wasn't something in it for him? Ilse, he wants them back, all of us. Man, he wants you to do your duty. The girls cannot be captured. Where is the location? Then, smiling Miss Rochel wanders past the open door.
Ilse, is everything all right?
I was just showing the minister your Reuter.
Forgive me. I'm a private collector. I just had to see it for myself.
Of course. Please, come and meet Lord Brockett. He's a close friend of Astrid's father.
Certainly.
The minister leaves with a pointed glance back at Ilse. She regards the microfilm secreted in her hands and worries at it as she makes her way to the door. Thomas's shifting of position and subsequent floor creak makes her stop and turn back to the room. She glances over to where he is hiding.
Ilse, have you seen Mr. Miller? After they were, will you assemble the girls upstairs? They say the making of a great relationship is based on two things. Firstly, appreciate the similarities. And secondly, respect the differences. Tonight we link arms across the sea to celebrate a very special relationship. On behalf of the Anglo-German Fellowship, may I present the Augusta Victoria College for Girls.
Thomas Miller is stood amongst everyone gathered in the hallway, watching the girls in their powder blue blazers with school badge and open-necked blouses line up on the staircase to perform. Gretel stares down at him. The camera homes in on the school badge, Union Jack on one side, swastika on the other. Thomas gazes across at Ilse, expression impassive. She stares back, unsure about him, then turns her head aside. Gretel ceases singing, stares at Thomas. Later, Sigrid is given a ballet stretch on the stair handrail. She struggles for balance and flexibility.
Gosh. Concentrate, Sigrid. Before grace, there's strength. And before strength, there's...
pain.
It's raining. Und Bauch einziehen?
They dramatically clutch their abdomens.
Und leicht wie eine Feder.
They pirouette and leap into the dormitory, where one girl is brushing another's hair. Astrid is reading. The others watch the impromptu performance. Through an archway is another room, where Gretel sits on her bed, slowly unplaiting her hair. In the main dormitory, Astrid puts aside her book, decisively gets up and pads to the connecting archway, stands belligerent, arms crossed, observing the girl. Astrid, you think you're better than us? Gretel stares uncomfortably into the space between them, her hands pausing in their work. The rain is lashing down on a car parked by the seafront. Thomas Miller lets his bicycle drop to the ground and hastily gets into the back seat of Colonel Smith's car, bedraggled and sodden. The Colonel's behind the wheel.
I'll arrange our meeting. Stay in your lane, Miller. I'm not a fan of initiative.
The girls are leaving.
When?
Tomorrow.
How do you know?
Ilse Keller. Tonight's Anglo-German soiree. I overheard her talking to her contact.
How are you getting the girls out?
By aeroplane.
Where?
Thomas gestures his ignorance. A shadowy figure slowly approaches the front of the car. Colonel Smith has turned towards Thomas. Neither are aware of the third party.
I call the War Office with this. Can you assure me you haven't been compromised?
Yes!
Are you sure?
Damn!
Thomas rips the swastika pin from his lapel. Both men stare ahead as they become aware of someone approaching, identity obscured by rain on the windscreen. Colonel Smith leans forwards, a gun's raised.
Damn.
Three bullets are fired. One hits the back seat as Thomas ducks. The colonel is shot and slumps over the wheel. The gun has dropped to the ground. Bareheaded Ilse stares intently at the car, turns and flees into the rain-lashed night. Colonel Smith falls out of the driver's seat onto the ground. Thomas leads out to tend him.
Call Rifle 1154. Raise the alarm.
Colonel! Colonel!
The colonel is dead. Stunned by the turn of events, Thomas stares at his hands that are now covered in the man's blood. In shock, he pulls back, rises unsteadily, his bloody hands still held before him. His shoulders are hunched. In a daze, he straightens, turns, walks over to the gun. Rain bounces off the metal. He squats and picks it up by the barrel and grip. He stands. His shirt front is tinged red. He gazes incomprehensibly at the approaching policeman.
Oi! Stay where you are! Don't move!
Thomas drops the gun.
What have you done?
I did not do this.
Jules, get over here!
Thomas turns and flees.
Hey, stop! Stop in!
The coped policemen give chase.
Stop, please!
The lead policeman has a truncheon in hand. The camera homes in on the discarded gun. Policemen are on the pebbled beach heading towards the pleasure pier.
Don't move away from the light!
Breathing shallow, jerky breaths, Ilse is hiding from the police. Once assured they're going away from her, she turns and flees. The screen goes black. Then, the camera sweeps along the shoreline. Grass-topped cliffs slide down to rock-encrusted, sea-lapped shores. Further along, groins break up the beach that has become a mix of sand and small rocks. The sea is now as grey as the sky and the land misty with chill. The police are searching the pebble beach and pass through a groin.
Spread out, boys!
Thomas is asleep by a wooden groin. The police are nearing him. Thomas starts awake. Discovered, they give chase. Thomas splashes through shallow water, flees across great slabs of seaweed-covered grey rock. A bird's-eye view of the school is shown. The Gothic building is surrounded by trees and fields and bathed in sunlight. Ilse descends the stairs, eavesdropping on the girls' whispered conversation coming from the classroom. The police are saying he's dangerous, a murderer. But why would he do such a thing? Do we really know him? He was our teacher. We liked him. Ilse solemnly enters. The girls return to their desks. Ilse addresses them. Behind her, the chalkboard is unmarked.
It can often be hard to tell who someone really is. Who is good? And who is bad?
Can you tell the difference?
Well, it's not always easy. How can you tell a difference between the wasp and the bee?
Wasps can't make honey.
Good. Who can give me another example?
Gretel raises her hand.
Gretel?
Alligators and crocodiles.
And how do we tell the difference?
Their teeth.
And?
She gazes smiling around at them.
The shape of their skull.
The camera homes in on individual faces. Gretel, Sigrid, Astrid. It sweeps around the classroom. The uneasy girls are thoughtful. Ilse's gaze encompasses each and every one of them. She strides to the chalkboard. Set at the back, Gretel appears perturbed.
The Jew. And the Gentile. Just as we were fooled by Emila. We may not appear easy at first to identify the Jew. But there are ways we can tell.
She turns her head to glance at Miss Rochel in the doorway.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wondered that, with everything that's happened, whether the girls might like a break. Tea, perhaps.
Maybe after the class.
She closes the door on the governess. Troubled, Miss Rochel walks away. Ilse addresses the girls, who are disturbed by this exchange.
You must forget about her. Forget about this place. Germany's your home.
Astrid glances around. Gretel opens her mouth as if about to speak. Thomas races along a narrow outcrop of clifftop, his blood-stained black tie attire an adequate protection from the chilly dawn. Clutching his jacket tight against the cold, he checks for pursuers. He carefully makes his way down to where a band are relaxing on the pebble beach, resplendent in navy and gold uniforms. One uniform is unattended, folded on the rocks, its trumpet-playing wearer wearing a one-piece bathing suit.
What do you think this is, Shangri-La? We're on at the Winter Gardens in an hour!
Look lively! And Bill, what you don't get sand in your flugelhorn?
Come on, Jackie, chop chop.
But sir, come on, we've just got here.
Now, if you please, smarten yourself up. And if you lot get on the bus before Hitler invades Poland, I'll buy you all an ice cream.
Jackie trudges towards the rocks where he'd left his uniform.
Very funny. Very funny. Which one of you fellas let me close, then?
Buttoning up Jackie's uniform top, Thomas furtively makes his way towards a group of people watching a performance. A policeman's handing out wanted leaflets. Thomas turns his back to accept one. There's a photo of him in his black tie. Text, have you seen this man? Thomas Miller, wanted for murder. Do not approach him. Contact the police with any information. Bexhill 4037. A grey-suited man holds a teddy bear, puffs on a cigarette by a public telephone box. A woman makes a call.
Gas masks in Woolworths. I mean, what is the world coming to? Well, you better get used to it, she says to me, because when the balloon goes up, it's going to be pandemonium.
The police are out in force.
Got to be here somewhere, isn't it?
No, it's this school teacher chappy who's giving me the heebie-jeebies. Haven't you heard? Killed a colonel. They say he is a Nazi spy.
I have to make a phone call.
Wait your turn. Anyway, as I was saying...
It's really urgent. I have to make it now.
Stan! Stan, he's jumping in!
What's your game then?
I really need to make this call now.
Wait your turn, mate.
It's government business, so I've got to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I'm Charlie Chapman. Now, clear off!
You don't understand.
Everything all right here? Yeah? Well, do you want some of this? I'm warning you.
No, all right, all right.
Come on, clear off! Hey, clear. Miss Chapman just barged in. Right! You're right, darling.
Down there.
Sorry. You're right, darling.
Thomas keeps his cool as he walks unhurriedly away. He glances surreptitiously over his shoulder. He passes a tap dancer entertaining the deck chair seated public as he makes his way towards the pier. He slips through the turnstile with a paying customer, upsetting the man selling entry tickets. Thomas jogs along the crowded pier. Turning, he spies the police have arrived. He increases his pace to match up and then pass the band, his purloined uniform matching theirs. He makes a detour, spies a policeman, letting a couple know he's at large. Hunching into his stolen uniform, he doubles back, but the way ahead is blocked by another searching policeman. Thomas is now walking past the oncoming band. He slips in between the marching musicians, holding his clasped hands before him, as if cradling an instrument. Swimming-suited Jackie has noticed Thomas, who's on the same row as him.
Hey! Hey, you!
Jackie waves to get Thomas's attention.
Hey! Is that my uniform? You blind? Look at me! It's not my uniform! That's my uniform! Hey, you! Hey, you think you're...
Jackie breaks rank to go after Thomas, who pushes a balloon seller over as he runs away. Thomas pushes back through the band, clambers over a green bench. Jackie pushes band members aside as he gives chase. The austere band leader turns to face them.
Jackie, lads! Where do you think you're going?
Hey! My uniform!
Police!
Come on!
Hey! Get away! Get out right now!
Thomas runs straight into an oncoming policeman's fist. The screen goes black. Back at the school, Thomas's classroom door stands open. In the frame of the doorway, Miss Rochel stares at the chalkboard, her disquietude at the words Jew and Gentile causing her brow to furrow. She brings a hand to her mouth and worries at it. Her unease, as she contemplates the implications, deepens. Then, booted feet stride along a corridor, a spy hole in a door opened. Within its rectangular frame, handcuffed Thomas with a black eye and wearing the purloined uniform jacket, stares back at a policeman jailer. The spy hole is closed, the door unlocked. With a self-satisfied stance, the policeman stands to attention just inside the white-tiled cell. A well-dressed man with an insouciant manner stands outside in the corridor. Hands deep in his trouser pockets, he stares at Thomas.
Boiled eggs and vinegar.
Thomas stares uncomprehendingly at the man who enters.
It's good for the bruises, old boy. So my mother told me.
Thomas swings his legs off the L-shaped thin mattress bed, so he sits on the edge of it. The newcomer glances at the policeman.
Sergeant. Cha.
Finally comprehending he's being dismissed, the sergeant leaves. The insouciant man turns his fedora-hatted head to stare at Thomas.
Captain Dre, cabinet office. Love the get-up, old boy.
It's not mine.
Which makes you a thief. And a murderer.
And a spy.
That's Corporal Willis, and as you can see, he's very thorough. Yes, let's not forget spy.
German spy.
See what I mean?
Thomas has shrugged off the jacket and stares intently at the government agents.
I trust you know why you're here. You're accused of killing Colonel Smith, late of this parish, and hero of the Great War.
Telephone my superiors in Whitehall. They'll tell you I was working for Smith. I didn't kill him. Call them.
Number?
1154.
6 minutes to midnight. They haven't used that number since Cable Street.
Captain Dre saunters out of the cell. Belligerent Corporal Willis takes mistrustful puffs on his cigarette as he glares at Thomas, who grimaces a little. Captain Dre makes a call on a wall-mounted phone. The sergeant rises from his desk and stands to alert attention, watching the man.
Whitehall, 1154.
I don't have much time. Can you put me through or not?
We're on the same side.
Whitehall, 1154.
Hostile Corporal Willis throws a newspaper onto the cell floor. Thomas is the Bexhill Chronicle front page headline, Manhunt for a Murderer. His photos from the Anglo-German Fellowship soiree, swastika pin on his lapel. Thomas ruefully regards the image, glances up as Captain Dre returns. Willis and the sergeant resume their watchdog positions.
Well?
Yes, it's as I thought. That number went out with Uncle Stanley. Nice try, Miller.
Call it again.
But there's no one there.
Shall I start the car, sir?
Thank you, Willis.
Call it again. If you want answers, call that number again.
Sing a different song, Miller.
Slippery little sod, isn't he? Give me the key to the handcuffs.
Willis and the sergeant are in the office.
I know who killed Smith. I discovered the exit plans. I'm not a German spy. I am a British agent. I have evidence. A list of Nazi conspirators. English traitors. Get me out of here and I can prove it.
Captain Dre whispers in his ear, drags him to his feet.
Show me.
Gretel is sat against the crenellated parapet of her roof terrace hideaway, writing in a notebook. On hearing a car arriving, she stands and stares out across the driveway. The black and chrome Humber Snipe saloon pulls up. Corporal Willis gets out of the driver's seat and drags Thomas from the back.
Get up.
Captain Dre leads the way into the school. Glancing up, Thomas notes Gretel staring down. Stern-faced Miss Rochel strides to the doorway to meet them as they enter the premises.
Miss Rochel, I believe.
Yes. What is this? Why are you bringing him here?
Captain Dre glances back at Thomas.
Gathering evidence, ma'am.
I don't want my girls disturbed.
They're German, aren't they?
My girls are not the enemy.
You'll hardly know we're here.
He pushes past her. Staring down, the girls are lined up on the landing and upper level of the staircase. Disquietened, Ilse makes her way slowly down the stairs.
Fräulein Keller?
She glances at Thomas and then back to the captain.
Is there anything I can help you with?
Most certainly, don't go anywhere.
He glances up at the girls.
Nobody leaves!
I don't like your tone.
Ilse?
It's quite all right. I get that a lot. Where's your room?
Thomas glances up.
Lead on.
Corporal Willis pushes Thomas forwards. Ilse clutches her chest as if shaken to her core. Miss Rochel stands by her side, transfixed by the shocking events. Thomas glances at the girls, who are still in their positions. Their scrutiny of him is uncompromisingly harsh. Thomas retains an air of stoic composure. As he passes them, they turn to glare accusingly at him. Corporal Willis and Captain Dre stare intently at the girls as they pass them, making the young ladies nervous and anxious. Ilse once more clutches at her heart as she and Miss Rochel watch the men's passage.
Perhaps the girls should step into the garden until this is over.
Yes.
Ilse appears shaken and a little faint. Miss Rochel enters her office and closes the door. Ilse's face displays a myriad of emotions. Thomas is manhandled into his room. He's pushed into the chair by the desk. The book compensating for the uneven floorboards is crushed a little by his rough descent. Thomas rubs at the handcuffs, chafing his wrists. He's a little exasperated at their continued disbelief.
Well?
The fireplace. Reach up inside.
Captain Dre head gestures Willis should comply. The corporal strides over and reaches his arm up inside the fireplace.
Anything?
Removing a coal dust-smeared hand, Willis blows soot from a microfilm cartridge. He turns his battle-scarred face to his superior, hands it over. As Captain Dre regards the film, Corporal Willis stares at Thomas, who gazes at the floor.
Give us a moment, will you, Willis?
Willis regards both men.
That's an order, Corporal.
With a final glare at Thomas, he complies. Then, Thomas raises his handcuffed hands.
Ah. Careless of me. My corporal has the keys. But don't worry, old boy. If this is what you say it is, I'll have you out of here in a jiffy.
A 78 plays on a gramophone in the governess's comfortably furnished office. Tea-drinking Miss Rochel is stood over Ilse, who appears unnerved by the events. They stare at Corporal Willis, stood in the open doorway. Ilse gets up from her chair. Miss Rochel stares at the man. A scar runs across the brow line, slightly closing his left eye. He enters.
Please excuse the music. I find it calms me after everything that's happened.
Doesn't bother me.
How long will you be staying for?
For as long as it takes.
Miss Rochel glances uneasily at Ilse, and then across at Corporal Willis.
Would you like some tea?
He politely removes his hat, holds it before him.
Thank you.
Ilse?
Tessa calls. Excuse me.
Ilse diffidently passes the corporal. He watches her go. In the hallway, she pauses to gaze upon the portrait of Empress Augusta Victoria. The girls are outside. Ilse hastily ascends the stairs, keeping vigilance on the hallway below. She pauses, wrings her hands slightly. On reaching the top landing, she glances nervously back at the ground floor and then steps through an archway. Across the landing is Gretel's room. The girl thoughtfully notes Ilse's passage and slowly walks to her doorway. Ilse arrives outside Thomas's room.
How long have you been operational here at the school? Just over a week. Tell me about the Keller woman. She killed
Smith. Why? Her operation was compromised.
The Germans are extracting the girls. She found out that we knew.
So your cover is blown.
Thomas stares at Captain Dre, who turns aside.
It's just you and Smith, no bridge agent.
Ilse enters.
What are you doing? You can't be in here.
Why is he here?
That's none of your business. You have any questions, you can speak to my corporal.
He's getting restless, so hurry it up.
Thomas is perplexed. She stares pointedly at Thomas. Captain Dre walks away from them, deep in thought. And then he turns back, gun in hand. At first, it appears he is pointing the gun at Ilse. But then he moves, so the gun covers Thomas. Comprehension dawns, and Thomas leans back in his seat as he realizes the implications of her being there and the captain's reaction.
Had you searched his room properly, I'd have no reason to come here. First Wheatley, now him. Are they ready for tonight?
Yes.
And you? Are you ready?
To do what is necessary. No one, nothing gets left behind.
Gretel's eavesdropping.
Yes.
Thomas stares as Captain Dre takes a gun from under his jacket without taking his gaze or aim off Thomas. The man prods reluctant and tearful Ilse with the gun, thus commanding her to take it.
I believe the word you're looking for is Dunker. Now leave us.
Eavesdropping Gretel jumps back from the door as Ilse exits.
Gretel, what are you doing here?
I was looking for you, Frau Keller.
Out! Outside!
Ilse hides the gun behind her back as she pushes Gretel away. Ilse's composure crumbles and she hunches distressed over the gun before moving on.
A war with Germany will be the end of England. An alliance is our only hope that we can live.
Thomas grits his teeth.
And live with greatness.
Captain Dre strikes Thomas with a vicious backhand blow.
Hail victory.
The camera focuses on the propped-up chair leg. In the room below, the crystal chandelier shakes with every blow dealt. Miss Rochel and Corporal Willis are sat on sofa and chair respectively, in awkward silence. Ilse returns to her seat and exchanges a glance with Miss Rochel. Corporal Willis reaches for his cup and saucer. Captain Dre lays brutal blow upon Thomas's face, and his body rocks back with each connection. Corporal Willis stares up at the shaking chandelier. Finally, a blow knocks Thomas's chair from the book prop. Thomas manages to grab hold of the captain by looping his handcuff chain around the back of his head. A struggle ensues. Corporal Willis races upstairs. Thomas deals Dre a double-handed blow. Willis takes out his gun and enters the room. A chair's on its side, Dre's on his back. Willis stares out at the window. Thomas pulls himself over a lichen-coloured stone wall and runs across a field. In her room, Gretel is sat on her bed, brushing her auburn hair back to the open door. She gazes into the distance. Ilse appears in the doorway behind her. The girl glances at her, stands.
Save your strength.
Gretel obediently sits. Ilse sits on the bed behind her and gently strokes her hair.
I need to be ready.
Gretel nods.
Yes. Here, let me.
Ilse takes the hairbrush and scrutinizes it.
My mother used to brush my hair.
She starts to brush Gretel's hair.
And it had to be brushed. 100 times. And if she found a knot, Hand.
Gretel holds up her trembling hand. Ilse hits it with the back of the brush, resumes brushing. Gretel puts her other hand on top of the admonished one.
What were you doing outside Herr Miller's room?
Gretel fights back frightened tears as the brushing resumes.
Clever girl. Always watching.
Charlie's maroon and cream bus is travelling the lonely coastal road. The sea glistens with dappled sunlight. Charlie smiles to himself as he drives. Thomas is fleeing across harvested fields towards the road. He's hampered by the handcuffs. Charlie's bus passes in front of him. He brakes. Thomas is on the ground, trying to prise the cuffs off. The bus door opens. Charlie pops his head out before alighting.
So you're not a teacher?
No.
Are you English?
My mother was.
Charlie walks over.
You're a spy.
Apparently.
Is your name Thomas?
Yes.
Good. All this change will kill you. Get on.
Wearing the stolen marching band trousers with his own white collarless shirt, Thomas scrambles to his feet and complies. The bus travels along a country road with overhanging tree branches. They pass over a stone wall bridge, and as they turn aside, Corporal Willis is driving the Humber Snipe at speed towards the bridge. Captain Dre observes the Bexilon Sea bus doesn't stop for 4 waiting passengers. They complain amongst themselves at this unusual behaviour. The Humber reverses. Corporal Willis raises one eyebrow as he stares after the speeding bus. Captain Dre turns his head. Charlie's bus careers around a bend and into a lane beside grey stone farm buildings. Chickens peck in the yard. He pulls over. As Thomas and Charlie get out, a black and white sheepdog trots over to greet its master.
I have to make a telephone call.
Not here, mate. I'm afraid mine's kaput. So look.
Charlie inspects the handcuffs, grabs a hacksaw.
This should do the trick. Let's get you some clothes.
Captain Dre dabs blood from his nose with his handkerchief as Corporal Willis drives them to Charlie's house. Thomas now wears blue shirt and trousers. The handcuffs have been removed.
Out of the way, old fella. Clothes do the job?
Yes, thank you.
This will help take the edge off.
He pours spirits into 2 mugs.
So what do you need a phone for?
I have to stop this Ilse Keller taking the girls and her intelligence back to Germany.
Intelligence?
Details on British agents operating behind the lines.
Oh, bloody hell. The balloon's going up, then. What'll happen to the girls?
They'll be detained as prisoners of war.
Childhood is made up of a few summers.
Both men race to the kitchen window as the Humber approaches.
Out of sight. I'll keep them busy.
They're dangerous men.
Save your breath.
Willis parks by the bus. Both men get out. Captain Dre points.
Look inside that bus.
Whatever happens, don't come back inside. Understand? Find your moment and scarper. Those girls deserve better. We all do.
Charlie!
My pleasure, sir.
Corporal Willis searches the bus. Charlie takes the 2 enamel mugs and liquor bottle to the kitchen. Captain Dre walks towards the house. Willis is hot on his heels. Thomas is hiding around the side of an outbuilding, his ear and mouth bloody, left eye blackened. He carefully slides the length of the wall. Willis is checking over a low wall that a brown chicken sits on. Charlie is checking his place is clear. Charlie opens the door.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
We're coming inside, Charlie.
Just a minute.
He grabs a newspaper.
Old habits. She'd kill me if we messed up the carpet.
He puts sheets of the newspaper over the rug by the door.
Where is your good lady? Like I say, old habits.
Did Thomas Miller hurt you?
Nothing I couldn't handle.
Good man.
He took some clothes, didn't say much, then legged it.
In the kitchen, Captain Dre picks up the almost empty liquor bottle. Charlie glances up at the ceiling. Captain Dre wanders across and picks up one of the two mugs Charlie and Thomas had used. Charlie watches, worried frowns creasing his brow. Captain Dre turns his head slowly to the older man, who shifts uneasily on his feet. Dre lifts the mug and sniffs the contents.
Single malt. Old habits.
Something like that. Cup of tea?
What a good idea, Charlie. Shall I be mother?
Dre stands menacingly right in front of Charlie, who turns. Corporal Willis's ominous form fills the doorway to the kitchen.
Sit down, Charlie.
Charlie glances worriedly from one to the other. Resigned, he complies. In the distance, Thomas is running across grass, clambering over a fence. The camera homes in on the kettle, boiling on the aga. Captain Dre grabs the handle, drags it across the warming plate, turns towards Charlie, who wrings his hands and stares anxiously at the kettle as Dre slowly approaches. Charlie swallows, leans back as far as he can in the scuffed wooden chair. Dre stands over him, kettle raised.
If you've helped a foreign spy, it's treason. You'll be hanged. Yes. And that's not clever.
Charlie flinches back as the kettle's raised.
So are you a traitor, Charlie?
I'm not a bloody traitor. He's half German, half English. I helped the English half of him.
Rather.
Captain Dre removes the threat and places the kettle back on the aga.
So, where did he go?
Charlie gazes at the floor, breath laboured. Back at the school, the girls are walking single file down the staircase. They wear jackets, coats, and carry small suitcases. Miss Rochel opens her office door. A few of the girls glance at her as they pass.
Astrid? Beatrix? What's going on? Ilsa? Ilsa? What is this? I demand an explanation. Why are you taking my girls?
Ilsa smiles briefly at Miss Rochel.
They were never your girls. Ilsa? Lost? Stay where you are, girls. Stop this at once.
Macht weiter.
Ilse stops Miss Rochel making a phone call.
Ilse, what happened to you?
Ilse puts the phone back on its cradle.
I grew up.
In green wool cape and red felt hat, she pushes past the governess and out through the front door, watched by Miss Rochel. The silhouetted figure of Ilse follows the girls as they walk away from the school. The camera slowly homes in on Miss Rochel, stood watching her girls be taken away. And as she walks, Gretel casts a glance back at the school. Miss Rochel's eyes fill with tears that glisten unshed. Thomas runs along a lonely road of a flat landscape. Grey clouds blanket the sky, rolling hills are covered in grass. He approaches a red public telephone box, paintwork rusting and peeling away, glass misted with droplets of rain. He flings open the door.
Operator, number please.
Whitehall, 1154.
I'm sorry, could you give me that number again?
Whitehall, 1154.
Connecting you now.
Hello? Hello?
He spies a car travelling towards him.
Can you hear me?
I hear you. Loud and clear. Do you have the correct time?
It is 6 minutes to midnight.
Repeat that, please.
It is 6 minutes to midnight.
You have clearance.
This is Thomas Miller. Send a TX-84 to Bexalon
City. Miller!
Hello?
Put that down!
Agent Miller, please...
Step out of there!
With hands held high, he backs out of the telephone box and surrenders himself to Captain Dre and Corporal Willis. Both have guns pointed at him.
So what happens now?
We take you in.
Where to?
End of a bloody noose.
Corporal, ask your captain how he knows Fräulein Ilse Keller.
Corporal Willis glances at Dre and then back at Thomas.
Desperate, Miller.
Tell your corporal what information you gave her.
Shall I handcuff him, sir?
No, that won't be necessary.
Captain Dre steps forwards.
This is on you, Miller. Remember that.
He turns and shoots Willis, who drops to the ground. Thomas takes advantage of his inattention and escapes by running into a field. Dre takes aim and fires. Thomas swerves as he keeps running towards a crumbling stone wall. Dre walks purposefully towards his quarry, who has gone beyond the wall, running a zigzag pattern. Captain Dre watches him, a smile plays around the corner of his mouth. He takes aim. Thomas stops and turns to stare back at him. The camera turns from one man to the other. Dre drops to his knees, surprise floods his face. He falls and his body rolls a little as it hits the grass. Corporal Willis has dragged himself to the edge of the road and supported one bloody hand on top of the other to shoot the captain. Thomas stares back at the corporal, breathing heavily.
German girls are leaving tonight. Sussex coast. Location unknown. Send aircraft to intercept. We are running out of time.
Message understood, Captain Miller.
They're leaving. Alert the elephant fleet.
A view from above shows Thomas and Corporal Willis in the school entrance hallway. They pass the glass and wood cabinet of trophies. Thomas enters his empty classroom, then briefly enters Miss Rochel's office, Corporal Willis at his heels. Thomas sprints up the wooden stairs. Willis clutches the scroll-topped post at the end of the handrail. Groaning with agony, he shouts up.
They're going to extract the girls by air! You're going to have to find an airfield!
Yes, but where?
Thomas enters the girls' dormitory. Their beds are neatly made. Miss Rochel is sat on Gretel's bed in the room beyond the connecting archway. She turns her head to him.
You're too late.
He turns to her. She's framed in the doorway. He walks over.
She's taken them away. All of them. My girls.
She stares numbly into the distance. Ilse and the girls, in single file, are clambering up a steep, wedge-shaped grassy cliff beside the sea. They labour against the steep angle and are burdened by their suitcases. A girl stumbles, her suitcase falls, opens as it bump rolls down the slope, clothes strewn everywhere. Girl, stop it, please. Ilse, keep walking. There's no time. Last in line, Astrid and two other girls help the distressed girl repack. Ilse starts down the slope towards them. Trust it to be you. Sorry, it was an old case. Not her fault. My case was too heavy. Ilse helps the girl repack. Gretel arrives. Astrid, are we walking to Germany, or is this another of your silly exercises? Ilse, don't be difficult, Astrid. Astrid, stop moving! The girls comply and turn to stare. Ilse, keep walking! They do so. Gretel, Astrid, don't do this. Astrid, we're not going to follow you.
Wir gehen keinen Schritt weiter.
Ilse stands, cigarettes behind her. Ilse, your family needs you home, Astrid. Astrid, who tells you these orders? Who gave you the power? Ilse, it's not about power. No. No. England doesn't want us. Can't you see that? I'm trying to protect you. Astrid, how? What can you do, Fräulein Keller? To the others. We're turning back. Ilse points a gun at Astrid. Gretel glances aside. The girls by the suitcase cower in fright. I admire your strength, Astrid. Astrid stares at the gun. At Ilse. Start walking now. Move. Astrid and the girls hurry to comply. Ilse, get up. Sigrid puts an arm around the shaking girl, whose suitcase broke open as they walk up the slope. Ilse gestures they should hurry up.
I have to find them. They're in danger. They're being taken out by air. Did Ilse mention a place Somewhere remote, flat, where they could land a plane.
Broken and shocked, Miss Rochel just stares at him until he stands and walks towards the maroon-painted door.
You'll need bread and mustard and a hogshead of beer.
He stares at her and then hastens away.
Out beyond Pevensey Castle, the flat sand. I've been there.
Willis is on the wooden bench under the school's honour board, hands and shirt soaked in blood.
Corporal Willis?
Blood trickles from the corner of his mouth as he stares up at Thomas.
I'm done. Go. Go!
Wait! If you think for a second I'm going to be left behind, you're wrong.
The men stare up at Miss Rochel. The sun is setting and the girls are still walking. Night draws near, and the girls are silhouetted against a darkening sky as they travel across fields and over wire fences. The horizon is a slither of pale golden pink between sea and sky. The girls' silhouetted heads as they walk single file disappear into the pitch black land. Headlights pierce the gloom as a car speeds along a country road. Thomas is at the wheel of the Humber. He hands Miss Rochel a gun.
How many bullets in the chamber?
She glances from gun to man.
Who are you, Thomas Miller?
How many bullets?
Five.
He takes the gun back.
You're not going to hurt them.
British intelligence.
A spy. Are you alone?
Whitehall are on their way.
What will they do to them?
You needn't worry about them. But if Ilsa's mission fails, she'll leave nothing behind.
I don't understand.
Germany can't afford the girls to be captured, so she will kill them.
She's one of them.
Not anymore.
A full moon hangs low in the night sky. The girls are on the beach, and each take a hand signal flare from Ilse's sand-placed open bag. Sigrid casts a surreptitious glance at Ilse, who, impassive, stands staring straight ahead. Gretel walks in the lead, Astrid behind her. At Ilse's command, the girls halt.
Umdrehen!
The girls turn on the spot.
Aufteil!
Alternate girls step forwards 9 paces.
Anhalt! Umdrehen!
They halt and turn to face the original line. Ilse walks in between the rigid stanced girls, glancing at them. Sigrid regards her and turns her head to track her passage as the woman passes. Then, once beyond them, Ilse turns to face them. Gretel stares at her without turning her head. Ilse puts hands to hips.
Umdrehen!
Both columns of girls turn to face her. Astrid swallows nervously. Gretel's shadow lengthens and joins with Ilse's. The Humber skids around corners.
I trusted her. I've been living a lie. Hail victory. There's nothing to be won here.
Ilse and the girls are viewed from behind. The camera focuses on Ilse's face as she scours the horizon. Gretel and others of the girls are portraying behaviour of increasing nervousness. They shift and sway. Their breath is shallow and rapid. Astrid is fearful. The sound of an approaching aircraft brings them to anxious alertness. Ilse is similarly displaying signs of apprehension. The girl's breath quickens. Gretel lifts her face to the sky. The other girls are also gazing upwards. Astrid's breath shudders out of her. Ilse steadies her breathing. The sky is filled with indigo-stained clouds. Gretel raises her flare to her chest and fiddles with the cord wrapped around one end. Ilse, wait.
Martin?
Gretel alone has her flare held aloft. Ilse, get ready. The girls raise their flares at shoulder height using the inside arm of the two lines. Gretel pulls nervously at the cord's end.
What?
Now! Yes. The girls raise their flares. Smoke and white sparks split the air. A red hue stains the sand. The red flare landing strip on the beach below is shown from a cockpit view. Ilse breathes heavily. An offside view of the corrugated metal German Junkers 52 tri-motor aircraft is shown. The Humber nears its destination. Miss Rochel stares anxiously across.
Christ have mercy.
As he drives, Thomas's glance follows Miss Rochel's.
Too late.
The Junkers 52 features a black and white crossing insignia on its corrugated metal wings. A back view of Ilse and the girls with raised arms flares, shattering the night. The Junkers 52 rectangular fuselage has rows of small square windows that lead towards the cockpit. The girls continue to hold their hand flares aloft. Ilse nods slightly. Bearing a swastika insignia, the plane's hinged rudder on the vertical stabilizer moves from side to side. The plane lines up with the girls' makeshift runway, and then a second plane cuts across its flight path, a roundel on each wing.
Fire! Hochbeam! Hochbeam!
The appearance of the Spitfire forces the German plane to abort its mission. Ilse watches in frustrated dismay. She and the girls must duck as their aircraft is chased over them. Ilse screams her defiant dismay as she watches their extraction plane being chased along the headland. Gretel straightens from her crouch. Illuminated by the Humber's headlights, Miss Rochel moves away from the station car. She clutches at her heart as she stares in the direction of Ilse and the girls. Immobilized by the sudden turn of events, Ilse gazes after the planes crossing the bay. She stares at the ground, becomes introspective. The girls break ranks.
Fräulein Keller?
Ilse briefly closes her eyes, grinds her teeth behind a closed mouth.
Fräulein Keller!
Ruhe!
Ilse, quiet! The girls recoil. Ilse has her back to them. Drop your flares! There's a moment of hesitation before compliance. Once cast aside, they stare at the woman's back. She turns, expression grim. She holds the gun with both hands behind her as she walks slowly towards them. Ilse, come closer. The girls group together. The discarded flares cast a red hue over them. They regard her intently. She stares impassively at them.
Ilse!
Thomas has his gun aimed at her, arm outstretched.
It's over.
Ilse raises her gun, aims at the girls who scatter back in fright, except Gretel, who stands her ground and faces Ilse.
Ilse, this is finished!
If only you were right! Turn. Turn!
Gretel complies, grimacing with fright.
Ilse, don't!
Ilse fires. She's aimed over Gretel's shoulder and Thomas drops to the sand in agony. Gretel drops to her knees, clutching her ear at the painful ringing retort of the gunfire. Thomas rolls over onto his side, half props himself up. He watches Ilse lower the gun, aiming towards the back of Gretel's head. The camera focuses on the girl's terrified anticipation. On Thomas, watching with dismay, on the gun in Ilse's hand, a thin gold bracelet around her outstretched wrist. Ilse turns her head towards Miss Rochel, who stood between the two columns of discarded flares. Gretel turns her head towards the governess.
What are you doing?
The camera homes in on Gretel, gulping terrified breaths. On Thomas, his gun some way from him on the sand. Gretel still has her hand to her ear. She awkwardly gets to her feet and turns to face Ilse, who shakes her head. Thomas scoots up his gun, points it.
Ilse! Ilse!
Ilse swallows hard as she keeps the gun trained on the terrified girl.
This is not the way!
Ilse is a coiled spring of tension.
Gretel, get back!
Thomas takes slow steps towards them. He's behind Gretel. The girl slowly reaches a trembling hand towards the barrel of the gun. Ilse gulps back, glistening tears. And the gun is lowered. Gretel smiles in relief, shoulders heaving, tears spilling. Thomas relaxes his gun arm, holding it by his shoulder. Miss Rochel watches as Gretel and Ilse remain locked in their positions. Then, Gretel turns and runs. Ilse drops the gun. Gretel speeds across the beach to Miss Rochel and is welcomed into a fierce embrace.
Oh. Gretel, you're cold.
I was scared.
Brave girl. braver than all of us.
Ilsa covers her mouth with one hand. Tears fall freely as she watches the other girls flee to Miss Rockall and Gretel. Sigrid reaches the governess first and is included in the embrace. One by one, the others arrive and they huddle into one another. Miss Rockall stares across at Thomas. He stares at Ilsa, who gazes at the girls with a mix of conflicting emotions, including affection and dismay. The camera focuses on the girls huddled around Miss Rockall. The image fades to black. In Miss Rockall's office, the wooden perpetual calendar shows Sunday the 3rd of September. A slow meander around her room lingers momentarily on items from the Victorian and Art Deco era. Miss Rockall is sat at her desk and smiles across at Thomas, seated opposite.
Where will you be going?
The War Office expects me back. It seems I still have my uses. The girls will remain here under your care until a solution can be agreed.
Not bad for a journeyman teacher.
Faith and perseverance?
Quite.
Then she leads the way into the entrance hallway. She smiles as she regards his reaction to the smiling girls who are lined up in front of the portrait of Augusta Victoria.
Girls, one, two, three.
It's a long way to Tipperary. It's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye.
Gretel smiles at Thomas, who's moved by the serenade. He watches with stiff upper lip and unshed tears, dons his fedora and walks towards the front door. The Art Deco brown Bakelite case radio in Miss Rockhole's office broadcasts.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note, stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
The screen turns black. White text reads, "The Augusta Victoria College for Girls, Vex-Hill-on-Sea, was the first and last of its kind in Britain. It opened in 1932 and was closed in the summer of 1939. Grainy black and white photographs show the girls playing tennis on two grass courts in the grounds, sat at their desks with a female teacher presiding over them, on the beach catching a thrown ball. In recreation time, the girls sit reading, chatting. One plays an accordion." The screen fades to black. 6 minutes to midnight. The end.
Thank you.
Meine Grüße haben dich auf deinen Weg gebracht. Die Liebe hält Geist und Kennschein. Du wirst nicht mehr stoppen, nicht saudern, du wirst nicht mehr schweigen. Heute tut dir kein Ungemein. Und wir werden die rollenden Wellen sehen und uns frei dazu. Nur all die Quälerei, na klar, es geht das Wissen für zwei. Gib auch die Zeit doch auch frei und Glück liegt da.
Steckt.